From Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. This show is for all you folks out there across the country trying to find your way and your path to success here in Music City.
That's right. We don't have any answers. We're slinging songs at night just like you. We are able to find the right people and bring them into the studio or, in the case of tonight, the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival.
That's right.
We have a huge show for you tonight. Hit songwriters Jason Blum, James Elliott, and Chip Taylor are hanging out with us in the first hour.
Yep, and then we're going to hit the stage for a live performance from some of Belfast's best and brightest young talents, Morgan McIntyre, Amanda Agnew, and Farriers. So without much further ado, Scott, why don't we get started here? Why don't you introduce our guest here?
Oh, Jason's been with us before. He's a favorite here at the Belfast. At the Belfast Nashville, they call it the Bel Nash here, don't they?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Here at the festival with massive hits in country and pop. He's also a renowned mentor, instructor, and author in the songwriting field and has just released his revised version of the business of songwriting. It is always a pleasure to say, Jason Blum, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
Well, thank you so much.
Woo. Yeah. Well, we were talking just yesterday, and you have had three consecutive number ones here in the European chart. Tell us about that.
Well, I wish that were true, Hino.
No.
Actually, they've been three consecutive top 10 singles.
Top 10,
not number
okay.
ones, but who's counting?
Yeah.
Yeah. I am so lucky. It's crazy. There's an artist based in the Netherlands named Bientel. It's B-Y-E-N-T-L. And you can all Google, you know, YouTube Bientel and see the videos that are great. And she is amazing and showed the really good taste to record three of my songs in a row and have them all be hit singles.
She must be brilliant.
Oh, she is amazing. Yeah. And it's really fun for me because right now one of the songs is number 15 on the Swiss dance charts, and it's on the German dance charts, and it's getting airplay in France and Austria, in addition to the Netherlands. And I've never had a song on dance charts before.
That's awesome.
Is new for me. Now I get to add something to my resume. And the thing that's so awesome is she is really incredible, and I love these recordings. But I have to say one thing. For people who are struggling and trying to get there, it is so much about persistence, because this first song that went to number 6 on the charts, not that I'm counting, but it went to number 6, and that song sat on a shelf for 7.5 years.
Really?
The second single is a song I wrote with the incredible Melissa Manchester.
Oh, wow.
And
oh.
that sat on a shelf for 10 years after we wrote it, before we got this cut.
Wow.
And it zoomed to top 10 and got more than 1 million YouTube video hits.
Wow.
And in a country the size of the Netherlands, that's something major.
Yeah, sure is.
And then the song that's out right now, it's called Inside Out. Again, really persistence. They asked me to write the song. I wrote it with Rick Chudikoff in Nashville, and 2 days later, it was recorded.
Love that.
So sometimes it happens fast, but not usually, not for me.
Man.
Well, let's talk if we can. I know you're about to start playing here soon, so we.
I am. I've got a show in about 20 minutes.
We got to get going here. So what's you revised your book, The Business of Songwriting. Surely the industry isn't changing at breakneck speed or anything, right?
Well, you know, at this point, it's a little tough if you're trying to pitch your cassettes.
That's what we're doing wrong.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, it's actually, the book is called This Business of Songwriting, and I spent 1.5 years revising it. Basically, what the book is, in a nutshell, is I know I've written a great song. Now, what the hell do I do?
Right.
So
right.
This is everything. It's not about the craft. It's everything you do after you've written the song, and it includes sample contracts of literally every contract a songwriter would be likely, that's what I'd say if I could speak, every songwriter contract that you might be likely to run across in your entire career, and it breaks them down into plain English one paragraph at a time.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah, it was not easy to do. I feel like I'm now an honorary attorney, but I did work, of course, with a music business attorney as a consultant.
Because that's actually the one big trap that so many artists and songwriters fall into, because, you know, you're so excited just to get any sort of attention, you sign anything.
Absolutely. And I know that the two of you were sitting right behind me when we got to see the amazing Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and how she talked about having no idea about the business and the terrible deals that they signed and were locked into. And what I wanted to raise my hand and say to her was, you know, it's not that you have to know every detail about the contract. You've got to get a great attorney. And
right.
At least I think if people read my book, they'll understand the concepts of what they want, what's a good thing, what's a bad thing. But when it comes to the contracts,
I still think you need a lawyer.
You absolutely need a lawyer. But the book also talks about a lot more about how you pitch songs and what a publisher does and how to get one and things like that.
But what was revised? Because the book's been around for a while. So what were the reasons for needing to revise it?
Well, I was joking when I said, because we know no longer pitch cassettes, but literally that was in the old version, and now it talks about how we pitch digitally, and it also talks about the streams of income, the digital income for royalties, for streaming, for ringtones, things like that. And I think also, I mean, this sounds silly, but I went back after all the years and I went, you know what, I've been teaching for 8-10 years since I wrote this book, I can make this better. And I think I did.
Good.
Wonderful.
How do we buy it?
Well, funny you would ask. it's available at Amazon.com as a digital version and a physical copy. And you can also get it at my website, which is jasonbloom.com, which reminds me, I should mention that if you go to my website on the front page, there are links to the articles that I've been doing almost monthly for BMI's Music World magazine. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing all the top songwriting pitfalls, the top 5 melody pitfalls, top 5 lyric pitfalls, top 5 demo pitfalls, and then coming up at the end of the month will be the top 5 pitfalls of doing business. And I'm getting great response on the articles, and people can just read them for free if they go to the website, and the links are right there.
Great. Well, you do a lot of classes and critiquing. You've done a bunch of workshops here in the Belfast Festival. So given that you do stuff all over the world, how does your instruction differ for different genres, different styles of music, and how they approach music in general in different countries?
It's really interesting that you would ask that, especially today, because this afternoon I did a melody workshop, which is my favorite thing to teach, and I really had the sense, and I asked the people in the room what they were writing, and so many of them were writing folk music and really Irish kind of folk music that right on the fly, I was changing a lot of what I was doing, because in that kind of music, for instance, you're not going to have a chorus that soars, that jumps out and sings, Jesus, take the wheel. I mean, you're not going to have that kind of a chorus in
a folk song. It's a different style altogether.
Exactly. Right. And I'll tell you, the thing I notice the most when I teach outside the U.S., because I teach every year in Australia and New Zealand and in Europe and often in the U.K. or Scandinavia, and the thing is, in those countries, they have a very different concept of what country music is.
Ah.
A lot of times people will say to me, I love country music. I'll say, who do you love? Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, Johnny Cash.
Okay.
And they've never heard of Carrie Underwood or Miranda Lambert or Blake Shelton. And part of what I do is explain that there is a difference between Nashville country and what will fly there, because there is a Nashville formula, as far as I'm concerned. If you listen to country current radio, you know there is. But that's not all that will fly, say, in Australia, or where, to me, some of the hit country music sounds to me like Hank Williams Sr.,
way back. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's really country, and it's old, and it's
traditional.
Exactly. So that's really the main thing I have to be aware of. And anytime I'm going into a country to teach, I want to study what their top 10 singles are on the pop charts. The ones, you know, in most countries, they're going to overlap with a lot of what we have in the U.S., but not in the country charts. Because, I mean, they will if it's a contemporary country station, but more of the country stations in a lot of the countries I teach are playing Dolly Parton, and they're playing Patsy Cline, and they're playing new artists who are consistent with those kinds of artists. So I love to do a class that sort of contrasts, say, Irish country versus Nashville country.
Okay. Wow. Well, we know that you're playing a show here in a little while. You want to give us a little preview of your musical stylings?
Yeah. What I'm going to play is the first single that I had out with Bientel, and it's a song called Unbreakable Hearts, and it was originally recorded by the Gypsy Kings, as you'll sort of be able to tell from the style, not that I'm very gypsy, but it turned into a political nightmare with them, but I was still ecstatic to have a cut with them.
Oh, great band.
Yeah, oh, they were amazing, and Bientel did just a killer job on it, so... When you said goodbye without a word, I felt my world come crashing down. Now my empty heart lays shattered and torn in broken pieces on the ground. Only you could make me whole again. Your touch could fill my soul again. It's like a spell I'm under, and I can't help but wonder what would it take to make unbreakable hearts. I don't understand, why does it hurt so bad? Or what would it take to make unbreakable hearts? We fly to the moon, split atoms in two. We learned all that, so there's no doubt. Oh, I believe there's just one more thing that we still need to figure out to dry the rivers of a thousand tears and make the sadness disappear. It's like a spell I'm under, and I can't help but wonder what would it take to make unbreakable hearts. I don't understand, why does it hurt so bad? Or what would it take to make unbreakable hearts? Until we find the answers, I'm gonna take my chances, 'cause there's no pleasure without pain. And I'll be holding on until I love again. Oh, oh, it's like a spell I'm under. I can't help but wonder what would it take to make unbreakable hearts. And I don't understand, why does it hurt so bad? Or what would it take to make unbreakable hearts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woohoo! All
right. Very
so Jason,
nice.
We have about 2 minutes left with you before you're going to go melt people's faces off with this music. I know you do festivals all over the world. In a minute and a half, what makes the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival so special to you?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I've been coming here for 9 years, not every year. I think this is my fifth year out of the last nine. I think I have to say the people. I love the music, but I love the heart of the people. There's just nothing like it. I've never run across people who are so friendly and so warm and so genuine. And I think there's no way for that to not seep through into the music and the whole vibe of the festival. I just love it.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. I mean, there's just a real authenticity here. They really love music here.
Absolutely.
Which is wonderful.
And since we're running out of time, I've got to jump in and say I heard some great music last night, and some of it came from these two guys, Scott and Hino. I didn't know the other side. I only know the radio guys. And I got to see these guys play, and you guys rocked. You were seriously awesome.
Thank you
so
much.
It not only sounded great, the songs were really strong. So, yay.
Nice.
Jason Blum is our new
favorite guest ever.
On the Music Row Show.
So you should definitely go buy his book.
That's right. Now, listen, we got to take a break. We're going to be back with James Elliott.
James, hit songwriter James Elliott is going to be joining us. So come on back. We're here at the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival. You're listening to the Music Row Show. Come on back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here at the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival. We've been having an amazing time.
And, oh, yeah.
And Hino, why don't you introduce us to this Nashvillian we have here with us in Belfast.
All right. Well, joining us now is hit songwriter James Elliott. As luck would have it, we kind of ended up on the same flight on the way to Belfast. So we've spent the last couple of days together so far having a great time. James is not only a hit songwriter with songs recorded by artists like Stephen Curtis Chapman, the Oak Ridge Boys, and Shenandoah, but he's also a teacher of the craft as well. James is the chair of the songwriting department at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee, where he guides many of tomorrow's hit songwriters and artists, actually a lot of today's songwriters and artists as well. So we're so pleased to say, James Elliott, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to be on with you and fun hanging out with you guys here in Belfast.
All right.
Isn't that weird? I mean, here we've probably been circling each other for years around Nashville, and we run into each other on the way here.
I know it. Driving around sometimes in town, I'll have to turn the radio up, and there you are. So I've heard you before, and I meet you live in person here. So
that's a big thrill, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Get on right into that mic when we're talking.
Okay.
James, I thought it was really interesting. One of the things that we were talking about the other day was when we were talking about what we were going to do when we got to Belfast, is how you wanted to hit the art galleries for the purpose of searching out new writing material. And talk about how art and literature can be a wellspring, and it sounds like that's something you use with your students, right?
Well, it is. It's one of the things that I developed primarily with Tom Douglas, who teaches a class in lyric writing with me. And so we were looking for some ideas. One of the things that Tom has said is he doesn't accept when anyone says they have writer's block. He doesn't accept it because there's so many things to write about, and whether it's the newspaper or an art museum or a TV show or movie, just to be inspired somewhere. So we think that we're inspired, and it's good to look to other great art, whether it's film or literature or art. So in Nashville, we send our students to the Frist Center for the Visual Arts, and there's always great exhibits coming through there. And so yesterday I went to the Ulster Museum here in Belfast, and it's really interesting. Some modern artists from Ireland and Northern Ireland, and then there's a really interesting kind of history of the Troubles with lots of photographs and lots of material. So I was absorbing that. A lot of times in art museums, you know, you can't take photographs of the painting, so sometimes I'll try to sketch myself or try to find pictures in the museum shop. But yeah, it's just an idea to get ideas, create stories, and maybe songs come out of that. So
wow,
yeah,
that's pretty amazing. So one of the other things you mentioned was that, ironically, even though we're in Nashville, or you're at the school, Belmont is in Nashville, most of the writing students that you have don't actually end up writing country. They go to other genres. That's kind of interesting. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, we have, you know, students that come from all over the country and even all over the United States and from some other countries as well. And not a lot of them want to write country music that come to study in our songwriting program. A lot of them are, you know, sort of the singer-songwriters, independent artists. We've even got some hip-hop artists that are actually doing very well. But some of the ones that do want to write country have been finding some success and finding some publishing deals. Within today's world in Nashville, as many of your listeners probably know, it's really tough, you know, to get a publishing deal and things like that. So, you know, our program is, we only started in about 2007, this songwriting degree. So I think in the years to come, you know, we're going to see some of our songwriting majors begin to have some success. We see the early indications of it now. So.
Right. Very good. Well, let's talk about that. I mean, how, because like you said, it is relatively a young program. How has it evolved just in the few years that it's been going, and what are the challenges as the program grows?
I think, you know, one of the main challenges is the growth. There's been such an interest and demand in the program. There is a separate admission process. But if we kind of back up a little bit to when the major started, there was a committee put together with industry folks and some leading publishers and artists. We had, you know, Rory Burke was on the committee, who's in the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. So it was a mixture of, you know, writers and publishers, industry folks. Ralph Murphy was on some of the early committees and things like that. So we began to look at what a curriculum might work with, and then the challenge was to try to find a songwriting faculty. And so I reached out through my friends and others to... I always, when they asked me to put it together, I wanted to have professional writers teaching the songwriting classes. So there's just two of us that are full-time, but then we have quite a few adjuncts, some really terrific writers that come in and do it. So, you know, we're just trying to sort of manage the growth and, you know, keep it kind of developing and hopefully helping the writers develop their craft, you know.
Excellent.
Well, Greg, well, let's back up a little bit. When did your interest in songwriting began? Do you remember that time?
Sure, yeah. I grew up in a had a big family. I've got seven brothers and sisters, and so we all played music. I played, you know, trombone in the school band, but actually I picked up a guitar when I started. I went to a community college in Michigan where I grew up and just got a guitar and began to take guitar lessons. My father had played guitar and banjo earlier in his life, but so busy with trying to provide for all the family, he wasn't playing a lot of music at that point. So anyways, I got a guitar, and then I actually moved to Arizona. I got a job working at the Grand Canyon.
Really? Well,
doesn't that sound fun? So for 3 months, and
as
so...
As a tour guide, or what were you
doing?
No,
I was working as a porter.
Oh.
Hey, Porter.
Hey, Porter.
But there weren't any trains. Basically, I was, you know, cleaning things up, picking up trash.
Okay.
But they gave me a place to stay, and what I saw every morning when I woke up was the Grand Canyon. So that
nice.
Wasn't bad. I saw some fantastic things. Took my guitar out there. That's where I began to write. So I was influenced early on by, you know, a lot of the Texas music, Jerry Jeff Walker and Willie Nelson, of course, Bob Dylan, like so many of us. And, you know, started writing back in college, and then eventually, not too many years out of college, I moved to Nashville. Some people I'd met in Michigan, and sort of began to get in the business and continued to try to develop the writing, and fortunately started getting some songs cut after I've been in town a few years. So,
great.
Wow. We'd love to hear a song. Would you mind playing something for
us?
Yeah,
I'll... I was thinking, you know, it's hard to kind of pick one to do, and I'm thinking of this song that I wrote with a good friend of mine named Russ Lee, and he's in a group called New Song, and we wrote this song. It was a little idea I had, and he'd been going through some things in his life, and this sort of kind of resonated with him. So this is one we wrote called God Hears. Well, you hope this day would never come. You can't look back, what's done is done. It's just so hard to lose and then go on. When all you have is not enough, it's hard to fall and get back up. When you can't breathe and your heart has lost its song. But there is hope, my friend, you will sing again. 'Cause God hears when there are no words to speak. God hears when the sorrows run deep and it feels like all your faith has disappeared. God hears when the silence is loud. God hears when you question and doubt. So let the comfort of His love calm your fears. God here. In a place they called Gethsemane is where he found his victory. When he told his father, not my will but yours. Jesus knew that it would be enough. Had to rescue us to conquer death and open heaven's doors. And a love so deep, It helps us believe that God hears. When there are no words to speak, and God hears. When the sorrows run deep, and it feels like all your faith has disappeared. And God hears. When the silence is loud, God hears. When you question and doubt, so let the comfort of His love reach through your fear. And God hears.
That's awesome.
Thank you. And a group called New Song recorded that. And if anyone wants to see it, look it up on YouTube and you see Russ singing it and talking about it. And he's just a really terrific singer. So, not being a great singer myself, it's fun to have people with really great voices sort of interpret the song. So,
hey, but anyways. You nailed it.
Yeah.
You're actually giving a session today in actually about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
I appreciate you being here.
Yeah.
You're giving a session on writing for gospel and Christian music market.
Right.
How has that market evolved in the last few years, and are the boundaries changing as the market changes?
I mean, that's a good question. I think they are. You know, one of the things I want to talk about is just really being real in your songwriting. I think that's true no matter what genre you write. And, you know, people just want honesty, I think, in the songs that we write. They want emotion. So I think we're honest, and those of us that are writing Christian music are coming from that perspective. You know, we just need to write and talk about what we're going through. And I'll talk, you know, there's lots of different sort of genres within the genre. So every kind
right.
of popular form of music you have, it's represented, whether it's Southern gospel, there's country gospel, there's contemporary, there's black gospel. And so it's really all over the map. But yeah, it's changing a bit. A lot of the artists write their own songs, and some of my success has been collaborating with the artist. An artist I've worked a lot with is Stephen Curtis Chapman, and if we get to visit back with you on the show sometime,
absolutely.
I may play some of those songs that we've
yeah.
done. But yeah, it's exciting. You know, it's really centered in Nashville, and all the companies now are owned or are part of the majors, you know,
right.
be it Sony or Universal or Warner Brothers, that all have their divisions doing Christian music. So,
mm-hmm.
But it's fun. There's really some great music and a lot of exciting. Some of it's kind of crossing over into the pop world and things like that. So it's fun to be a part of it.
Excellent.
Well, I'm just curious, I mean, backing up again, how did you make the transition from songwriter to college professor? I mean, what happened there to land you in
yeah,
Belmont?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I'd had a fair amount of success. I'd had a lot of songs recorded. I'd had some songs that had been number one in the Christian music charts. There'd been a lot of charts over the years. Radio and Record used to have a chart, and so it kind of looked good on paper, but there really wasn't a lot of money there. You know, I was getting some royalties and things. So I've been writing with a friend that went to Belmont University, and he introduced me to the man that ran the music business program, a wonderful gentleman named Bob Malloy. And, he was looking to bring someone on. He said, you know, if you'll, you know, go to graduate school, then I'll give you a shot teaching here. So
really?
I was working in television at the time and went to graduate school at Austin Peay. And so it was fun. That kind of opened the door, and he encouraged us to continue to work in the business, and so I did. I taught music publishing for a lot of years, continued to write, and in the summer I would tour with some of the artists I worked with. And but it's been really good to be able to kind of have a foot in both worlds, which I really like. It kind of keeps me connected, and I love to write. I do it on a pretty regular basis, and so that's kind of how that happened, and we can expand it sometime if we visit again.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to bring you back for a full hour. We just have another couple minutes.
Okay.
Talk about the festival, because you actually do quite a bit in Europe, and you've been involved with this festival for a while as well.
Well, it's really fantastic. This is my first time to be at the festival, but have known people that have participated, and
mm-hmm.
they sort of opened the door to Colin and Anne. They've just been so brilliant, just the people that kind of put the festival on, but so many great volunteers that they have here that really work. In years past, I've come over with students doing some study abroad programs, and
mm-hmm.
I actually have taught a class we call Lyric Writing in Ireland, and we come over for 2 weeks, and the students write, and we meet up with some singer-songwriters and tour a lot of the historic sites and, really, we've been to both Northern Ireland and the Republic and lots of great places. So I love Ireland. This is, I guess, my fourth trip, and hope to be back here again in the summer with some students. So I just absolutely love it. You've been over here. You can't kind of get enough for a lot of us. We love coming back with the history and heritage here. I was taking a walk in Belfast today and saw a big shop called Elliott's, established in 18-something. I had to take a picture of it. They even spelled it the way I spelled my last name. So
oh, yeah?
I went in
there.
They
probably had you in mind, I'm
guessing.
Do they have a T-shirt?
Well, it was like a costume shop. I should have bought some costumes.
You could. Yeah.
No, but it's been fun. I love, and this festival's terrific. Everyone I've heard and met have been so kind and really amazing, the talent, Donovan and Chip Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
So many, unbelievable. And then a lot of the locals have been here and really terrific writers. And so
excellent.
It's been great being here.
Well, it's great having you with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. If people want to find out more about the program, they maybe want to come study with you, how do they go about doing that?
Well, the best way is just to go to the Belmont website, belmont.edu, or
okay.
You can just do a search for Belmont songwriting, and all of that will come up. That World Wide Web, we utilize it. But, Belmont's got a great website, and you can kind of explore lots of different programs we have.
Excellent.
There.
Perfect.
Great. Come back and see us soon Nashville, and thank you very much.
Thanks,
all
guys.
Right.
Loved it. Had fun.
We've been here with James Elliott. We got another great segment coming up.
We got Chip Taylor coming up.
And you're going to definitely want to tune in for that. So we'll be right back on the Music Row Show. All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Chip Taylor.
Yes, now imagine being able to say you've had Janis Joplin cuts, Frank Sinatra cuts, Aretha Franklin, Willie Nelson, Ike and Tina Turner, Dusty Springfield, among the many, many artists to cut one of your songs. And then just imagine that those aren't even your biggest hits.
Right.
Chip has written not one but two massive, massive hits that literally span generations. My daughter was listening going, oh, I know that song,
yeah.
And she's 15, and it's just crazy. One is a rock anthem that is one of the first songs any kid with an electric guitar learns how to play, and everybody in the garage can sing along. And the other is really one of the more iconic, heart-wrenching goodbye songs ever written. From Wild Thing to Angel of the Morning, this is a huge, huge honor to say. Chip Taylor, welcome to the Music Row Show. We're so glad you're here.
Well, yeah.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks, everybody.
Wonderful.
Well, I just must interrupt you for a second, because one of the blessings for me is that I'm on tour with this fellow here. I've known him since the 70s, and we've been playing music. He also played with Randy Newman, Bonnie Raitt, several other folks, but more famous in this part of the world and in all the world for playing with Van Morrison over that entire span of time. He's the guy that played on Moondance and Domino and all that stuff.
Wow.
John Platania right
here.
Wow.
Nice. All right. Well, Chip, I understand that you almost turned pro golfer and didn't do the music thing. What changed? How did you detour from golf over to music? What happened?
Well, I was assigned to the all-black record division in New York of King Records, and I wasn't selling enough records to make a living. My dad was a golf professional, and I was a good golfer, and I turned pro, but I wanted music desperately, and I went to the city to try to sell my songs instead of being an artist, and all of a sudden I got recordings by Willie Nelson and Bobby Bear and the Brown family and all that, and later Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash, and I was in the business as a country and western songwriter from Yonkers, New York, the only one.
Wow.
So that's how I got there.
And that wasn't that James Brown's label? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was
you were the
Hank
country
Ballard
guy.
And the Midnighters and a whole bunch of R&B artists and wonderful artists, Mickey Baker, Panama Francis, and me. But I didn't sell a lot of records.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Wow. Well, and we mentioned this earlier, but you've had songs cut by countless artists. You continue to write brilliant, relevant music. I've got to be the bore, though, and ask about Wild Thing for a minute.
Sure.
writing and hearing that Trogs cut, which I know was the second version released of that song, right?
Right.
Did you have any possible comprehension of the legs of that recording?
Well, I love the recording. I love the song felt extremely good to me when I wrote it. And the first record of it was done like a blues record. It wasn't done like a demo.
Mm-hmm.
And the second record was done just like the demo.
Okay.
And so I loved that recording. And if it wasn't for the Trogs recording that song the way they did it, Jimi Hendrix would never have heard it and loved it. And so
right.
I owe a great debt to those wonderful guys, Reg Presley and the Trogs, a good bunch of guys. Reg passed away recently, and
yeah.
wonderful family man. And so you want to hear a little of that?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so I got in the studio, and I wanted this. I'm a stream of consciousness writer. I don't like to think too much when I write a song. So I had a cool little chorus that felt really good to me, and I wanted the rest to come out spontaneously. So I asked the engineer when I got there to the studio to turn the lights out so that I could just let myself go and say. I knew I was going to stop in the middle of the song and say things, but I just didn't know what I was going to say. So here's just picture me in the studio with the lights out and banging on a big K guitar and sounded like this. Here we go, John. 2, 3. Wow, friend. You make my heart sing. You make everything groovy. Come on, wow, friend. Wow, friend. I love you, but I want to know for sure. Come on, hold me tight. I love you, wild thing, shake it down. You make my heart. Rock and roll from the mess, jump with that. Right there, John Plotine. Let's give him a nice hand right there. Wild thing, I think you move. But I want to know for sure. So come on, hold me tight. You move. Wild.
Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of the Music Row Show. Stick around. Just call me Angel or the Morning Angel. Just touch my cheek before you leave.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here at the World Class National Songwriters Festival. We're here with Chip Taylor right
now. Yeah.
And that song we just heard right now is Angel in the Morning. That's a great song. So that song's been cut by so many artists, and like Meryl Rush, and of course Juice Newton had a big hit with it. Even Shaggy used it in one of his tunes. Talk about writing that one and how it got to all those people.
Well, that one was again, I'm a stream of consciousness writer. I try not to think about anything, but I happened to watch a war movie the day before, and I'm sure that influenced it, where the hero and the heroine might never see each other again, and might have one night to be together, and it was a special, special love, and a beautiful love, and I think that's where that song came from. But I was just sitting around doing just playing chords and humming nonsense to myself, and then all of a sudden the first line came out, and that's what wrote the whole song. So you can just picture me singing this in my writing space, and I looked out the window and I said, finally, after nothing came out, this came out and went, there'll be no strings to bind your hands, not if my love can't bind your heart. And when that came out of me, I was on fire. I had no idea what it meant. I just wrote the words down, and then I played it again, and it felt beautiful to me. And then finally, there'll be no strings to bind your hands, not if my love can't bind your heart. And then the next line came out, and there's no need to take a stand. It was I who chose to start. And again, that same chill all over my body. And then the rest of the song just flowed out of me. I see no need, take me home. I'm old enough to face the dawn. Just call me angel of the morning, angel. Just touch my cheek for the dreaming, baby. Just call me angel of the morning. Just like, leave it right like that, but that's how I like it.
Woo! So you left the music scene for a while, several years, 16 years. What wore you out of the business, and what is it that brought you back?
Well, I was always a gambler. I'm very good at knowing what I'm dumb at, and I wanted to learn about horse race handicapping, and at first that was very bad, and I studied from a master, and I got very, very good. So while I was writing my hits, I was making a couple of bets a day and doing very well at it. And finally, I just had a couple of things that were bothering me about the business and liking the gambling more and more, and just left entirely to gamble for 15 years. My mother's illness and playing music for her instead of going to the racetrack is what changed my life and headed me off and playing music 100%. And that's what I do now. So I'm glad I did it, but I love my gambling when I did it. You can't have everything, or can you?
Well, and I understand you. When you say you were very good at it, you were very. If I read this correctly, it got to where the tracks didn't want to take your bets.
Well, that wasn't the tracks. I was also a card counter, and Atlantic City banned me from every casino as a card counter. I was very good.
Oh, yeah, they don't like that.
But then I had Meyer Lansky was my bookie and my racetrack bookie, and I couldn't understand why he would keep taking my bets, and because I had won 33 out of 36 weeks when I started with him, and they used to bring me presents and whiskey. And so I finally said to the runner, I said, George, I said, why are you doing this? How come you're so nice to me? I've beaten you 33 out of 36 weeks. And he said, well, you know, Chip, our boss is a very smart fellow. He said, when you beat our brains out the first 3 weeks, he told us to take 10 times as much as you bet and bet the same things with other bookies in the racetrack. He said, you're one of our best customers, if not our best customer.
That is awesome. I love that. I was noticing so many of your songs have been cut by multiple artists, not just one or two, but a whole bunch. And I don't think that doesn't seem to happen too much anymore. Artists don't seem to be too interested in cutting a song that's been recorded before, it seems like. How did you get around that at the time? How is it that so many people cut songs multiple times?
I also think it's the kind of songs that you get. If it's a catchy little tricky thing, it comes from the brain, those songs don't last very long. They may be a hit once, but if it's something that's from the heart, heart songs last a while. And I don't mean it has to be, it can be a wild thing. It comes from a passion, a real passion.
Right, right.
So I don't know. I've been very fortunate in that regard.
Wow.
And I've had some great artists. And I got great players. I got John Platania playing with me doing my things. And then you get great people like Dusty Springfield singing your songs and so anybody hears a Dusty Springfield singing one of my songs, they think it's the most beautiful thing in the world because Dusty singing it.
Doesn't hurt.
Doesn't hurt, yeah.
Doesn't hurt. Well, how do you think the Americana market how that's kind of been a big surge in America anyway. How do you think that's opened up the career potential for musicians that are really out of the pop radio window these
days?
Yeah,
well, even pop Nashville. So I think Americana has taken it to where Americana and the Internet, there's a lot of not good things about the Internet for artists, but there's a lot of wonderful things. I mean, the idea that your music can be heard all over the world, that there is a format, like you said, Americana, where people with who are writing more heart type of things, where a guy like John Prine can be a state, you know, on the top of the charts, one of the most brilliant writers of all time. Can you imagine not being a place for John? So, you know, it's a good time. Lucinda Williams can hang out there, and wonderful stuff coming. And so I think it's a good time. It's a hard time to figure out, if you're not a real superstar, how to get through the business. But I think it's a very good time.
Great.
Inspiring time, put it that way.
Well, your album, Yonkers, New York, was nominated for a Grammy. Mm-hmm. After so much recognition as a writer, what did it mean to you to be recognized as an artist as well?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, I love coming to places and playing and having people come to see you. You know, like last night was a wonderful turnout. I have a fan base in Belfast, and I have a fan base in Norway and Sweden. I don't mean a lot of people, but between 150 and 300 or 400 will come to see me. And it's just it's nice because you can, it's not like you're just going there to play the hits. Not that I mind playing the hits, but I'm going there to play my new music. I'm playing something that means something to me, and you're playing to an audience who wants to hear what you've got to play.
Right.
That for me is everything. You know. So you want to hear a new one?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Here's just a little song. I like this little song. It's a little blast of love. It's from my new album. I hope you're okay. I hope nothing's wrong. And I hope each day begins and ends with an old John Prine song. And I hope you cry when you need a tear, until all the hurt inside just disappears. And that's how I love you tonight. That's how I love you tonight. That's how I'm loving you tonight. Now, I wrote that song for you last night on the way to the health club, trying to do something good for myself. Wrote it in hopes it would bring us closer together through the tough times. And I hope you cry. You need a tear until all the hurt inside just disappears. I hope you cry when you need a tear, and such tears of joy would flow if you were here. And that's how I love you tonight. That's how I love you. That's how I love you tonight. That's how I love you. That's how I love you. That's how I'm loving you tonight.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming in and hanging out with us and visiting with us here at the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival.
Thank you, guys. Wonderful.
Where can people find out more about you? Website?
You can get on Amazon and iTunes, and Trainwreck Records is the name of the label.
That's it.
So it's got a place there. So either on my Facebook or Chip Taylor Facebook.
Sweet.
Trainwreck Records or iTunes or Amazon.
It's been a pleasure. If you ever come to Nashville, will you come visit us and actually come hang out in the studio?
Sure.
Okay,
that's
we
awesome.
Love that. Thank you very much, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, we got a whole another great hour of the show coming up with Amanda Agnew, Morgan McIntyre, and Ferrier. Stick around on the Music Row Show.